and thank you for tuning in to the HD View. This is Melissa, your host. Melissa Biliardi, that's me. Tonight, our call-in numbers are 310-982-4227 and 877-497-4103. That 877 number seems to be amiss tonight, so try the 310 number for sure. You should get in that way. When you call in, press 1. We'll cue you into the show. Please tell all your colleagues, friends, and family about Help for HD Radio and click follow on the show page to get email reminders of upcoming episodes. Thank you, 72,000 listeners, for tuning in. It keeps growing every week, more and more. So we're very, very proud of that and very pleased to be able to bring you a live show every week. Tonight, I just kind of want to preface the show by stating that I am dealing with some things here at home, so I may have to step down and allow our awesome producer, James Valvano, is back with us tonight. Yay! Need the clap button. And another very special guest that I have tonight that I'd like to introduce before Dr. Alicia Samaka comes on. Katie Jackson is with us tonight as well. And I'm just very pleased and proud to have Katie Jackson join our team at Help for HD International Incorporated, and she is our new vice president, and some of you already know that, but I am very proud to have her with us. She is an HD warrior and advocate extraordinaire. We just love her to death, and welcome everyone. Welcome Katie to our organization. There's that clap. Tonight, we have an amazing young woman, Dr. Alicia Samaka, from the University of British Columbia, on with us tonight. Let's take just a quick little break here, and we'll come right back with our guest. And Katie would like to say a word to y'all as well. So we'll be right back. Everyone, hang on. I'm wide awake. And I'm so glad to have my team back with me tonight. James Valvano, my awesome producer, Katie Jackson, my awesome VP. Welcome back to the show, everybody. We've got some awesome new music, too, so that's kind of cool. Katie Jackson is with us tonight, and I'm so pleased to introduce to you our new VP, Katie Jackson. Hi, Katie.
Hi.
And take it away, Katie.
All right. Let me start by saying I'm so excited to be here with you guys tonight. As many of you know, my husband was diagnosed with Huntington's disease around 7 years ago, and we also have 3 children at risk as well. I decided when Mike was diagnosed that I was going to make Huntington's disease advocacy a part of my life's mission. I've been really fortunate to have made some amazing friends in our HD community, and researchers and clinicians as well. A couple years ago, I was asked to be on the ACU, and that day I got to meet Melissa and James, and little did I know that day when I was speaking with them that these two people are going to become an amazing, very important part of my life. When I started looking into Help for HD International, I was blown away and couldn't believe that a grassroots organization was able to accomplish so much success and important programs for our HD community on virtually no budget. As Melissa and I became closer, I was in awe of all the future programs and projects that Help for HD International are getting ready to launch or already have. I was so honored and excited when Melissa asked me to be the vice president of Help for HD International. It was really fun. We were on the phone, and when she said it, I didn't even have to think about it. I just said, yes, yes. She started laughing because I was on board right away. I really can't wait to be a part of all the current and future projects of Help for HD International. I'm excited to see all of these projects evolve and come to life for our whole HD community, for my family, for all of your families, for our whole HD family. We have a powerhouse team here at Help for HD International, dedicated advocates. In my mind, there's going to be no stopping us at all. People with the passion and drive that we all have here at Help for HD International, we are going to be unstoppable, and we are going to bring so much amazing stuff to our HD community, and I am really excited to be a part of it.
Amen.
So for now, let me introduce our incredible special guest again, Dr. Elisa Samaka, a postdoctoral fellow at University of British Columbia. She received her MSc in genetic counseling in 2005, and her PhD in medical genetics under the supervision of Dr. Michael Hayden at the Center of Molecular Medicine and Therapeutics in 2012. Her doctoral research focused on intermediate, alleles. Did I say that
That's
right?
That's correct.
Dr. Samaka, yay! For Huntington's disease. Her research findings fill up a significant gap in our knowledge on intermediate alleles. And have important implications for predictive testing. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for being
a guest tonight. How are you doing?
Great. Well, I'm thrilled to be here and talking to you and the rest of the Huntington's community. So thank you for this amazing opportunity.
Awesome. Now, Dr. Samaka, before we ask you to discuss your molecular and clinical research area, specifically in the intermediate alleles, can you tell us how and why you decided to focus your studies on Huntington's?
Well, as Katie said, I did my master's in genetic counseling. And as part of my genetic counseling training, I spent some time in the predictive testing clinic for Huntington's disease. And it was really through that experience that I became passionate about Huntington's disease. I thought it was just totally courageous that people would choose to go through the testing and the multitude of ethical and social issues that they have to deal with in making that decision to go through testing. I got hooked. I had to just focus on Huntington's, and that's really where my passion lies and grew. But in terms of intermediate alleles, that really came about in respect that there was very little research available on intermediate alleles. And as part of my master's in genetic counseling, we do a small research project, and I chose to do that project with Dr. Hayden. And really, when push came to shove and I graduated, I couldn't walk away. I decided that I had to take that project through to the end, and basically it became the foundation for my PhD work. And as they say, the rest is history.
Awesome, awesome. Now, when, I mean, this might sound like a strange question, but we do often ask, when you first met the very first person with Huntington's disease, what was your feeling regarding, you know, your studying and then actually finally meeting someone with Huntington's?
Well, I've really been privileged in terms of being able to take part in a lot of community and outreach activities where I've met numerous amazing patients as well as their family members. And, you know, the first person that I met did not have Huntington's disease but was going through predictive testing. And truthfully, I mean, how to articulate how I felt is difficult to do, because I was just, as I said, in awe of their courage to go through the testing and, you know, face this disease head on. And so really it's a difficult question. how to reflect on that is just, my experience within the community has been unlike no other. I think that the Huntington's community is very special. Their willingness to share their experiences and participate in research. I really think that of, you know, all the genetic diseases that I've learned about, Huntington's has that special quality.
Definitely. Well, can you tell our listeners about your molecular and clinical research on intermediate alleles, specifically on the CAGs of 27 to 35?
Yeah, so I guess, you know, just to kind of start and get everybody on the same page, intermediate alleles are a unique category of HD genes. Basically, we all are aware that Huntington's disease is caused by a CUG repeat expansion in the HD gene. And so if you have 36 or more CUG repeats, you will develop the disease in your lifetime. And then we say if you have 26 or less CUG repeats, you will not develop the disease. Now, where intermediate alleles come in is that range in between. So as you said, 27 to 35. And so basically intermediate alleles were actually identified back in 1993, shortly after the gene was found. There was, you know, a few research articles written on them. But since then, there hasn't been a great deal of research. And as I said, that's one of the reasons why, you know, Dr. Hayden and myself and now, you know, a number of research groups around the world have really, begun to focus on this area, because there's just not a lot of answers out there. Intermediate alleles have between 27 and 35 CUG repeats, which is a range that falls just below the number required to develop the disease.
Hey, guys, I'm back. This is Melissa. am I hearing this right? Is it 36 and above is full penetration or penetrance?
Yeah, so when you look at the Huntington genes, so 36 or more, you can actually break that Huntington's range down into two different categories as well. So you have what's called a reduced penetrance range, which is between 36 and 39 CUG repeats, and you have then what's called full penetrance range, which is 40 repeats and more. And what the difference is between these is really basically age of onset. So when somebody has a reduced penetrance gene, so between 36 and 39 repeats, we say that most likely they will develop Huntington's disease if they live long enough. And this is because in this range, we see that age of onset tends to be later than in one's 30s or 40s, or the typical kind of age of onset. So for those individuals, you know, they may in fact, you know, never develop Huntington's. They may actually, die of cancer before, you know, Huntington's disease would arise. Whereas with the 40 and above, we know that there is this relationship between CAG size and age of onset, and most likely 40 or above, you're having more of the traditional age of onset in you know, the third or fourth decade of life.
Okay, so what we're kind of saying is there are variables that are not within control, our control.
Well, there is what research has done or has found is that there is this relationship between the number of CAG repeats and age of onset, or whether or not somebody will develop the disease. So we know that the more repeats somebody has, the more likely they are the earlier they are to develop symptoms of the disease. And so while we can say that there is this relationship, and research has shown that this relationship exists, it's not a hard and fast rule, and therefore, you know, there is individual differences. If you were to take, you know, 100 people with, you know, 36 repeats, well, on average, they would have a later age of onset compared to 100 people with, you know, say, 44 repeats. But as I said, it's not a hard and fast rule, and we know that there's many different genetic factors. We don't know what those genetic factors are, but there's likely many genetic factors that may have a modifying effect on that age of onset. And, you know, there may be, in fact, some environmental factors that, you know, scientists haven't discovered that may be modifying age of onset. So, you know, while we could say as a group, you know, that there is a trend towards increasing age of onset with increasing CAG size, it's not predictive in the sense that we would be able to tell somebody based on your CAG size you're going to develop symptoms at this age. And, you know, it works in reverse too. There's, you know, people who have larger repeats who in fact have yet to develop symptoms. And it's interesting, these individuals who have late age of onset or early age of onset, when you look at their CAG size, it's those individuals that scientists are most interested in studying to try and find out, well, what's going on for that individual? Why may they have late onset, or why may they have early onset? And so it's through research like that that we will be able to hopefully one day in the future identify some of these genetic or possibly environmental factors that really, you know, impact age of onset.
I think it's so interesting that you researchers studying that, because us as a community, we've had so many numerous talks about that with one of our loved ones. We'll talk about their counts, their CAG counts, and they'll say, you know, well, this count, my count is this. Well, our count is, well, it's totally one person with a lower count would start onset so much earlier than someone we knew with a higher count. So it's really confusing as us as a community as well, seeing these different, you know, the CAGs onset when in a lower age, a higher CAG. We're confused, obviously, with that as well. So it's exciting that research is going on. We've even talked to, as a community, with the second, you know, the second will and different things along those sorts, just trying as a community to figure it out. So it's really exciting because that researchers are studying it and looking at it, and hopefully can find some answers to this.
Absolutely. And, you know, that's one of wherein lies one of the difficulties. You know, individuals go through predictive testing because they, you know, want to find out, you know, whether they carry the gene or not. But that's kind of where the predictive nature ends, is that we're really not yet at this stage where, never mind predicting whether or not you may or may not develop Huntington's, but predicting when you will develop Huntington's. So,
can I interject for one moment? I don't mean to interrupt you, Dr. Simanka, but I want to make sure, because I know that the community, this is a very hot topic, as I know I spoke with you earlier on the phone today. But we have to make sure that we give credit where credit is due, because I don't know about you, Melissa, and Katie, but, you know, I'll take the jump and guess. This is literally the first conversation that we have had that's giving us answers. And I personally want to thank you, Dr. Simaka, for coming out on that limb and saying, you know, we're working towards it. We're trying to help you. We understand you as a Huntington's community. You're wanting answers. Because like Katie just stated, we have numerous groups on Facebook and across all social networks that you'll hear that analogy that you gave before, where someone with a low CAG is having more physical onset or emotional, you know, onset than someone who is in the late CAGs, you know? So it's very important that we are having this conversation. I want to thank you for that ahead of time.
Oh, well, thank you. I'm happy to pass on the information that I know about reduced penitence alleles, but I just wanted to take this opportunity to clarify that there is a difference between reduced penitence alleles, what we're talking about right now, and intermediate alleles. They have two different clinical implications, and they're often intermediate alleles and reduced penitence alleles are often referred to as kind of this gray area of Huntington's disease. So as we're talking here about reduced penitence, it's gray in the sense of, when will I develop Huntington's, or will I even live long enough to develop Huntington's? So that's kind of where the gray kind of uncertainty comes in for that category of results. But, to come back to intermediate alleles, which is really kind of my area of expertise, there is a gray area in terms of the clinical implications of these alleles. So reduced penitence has between the 36 and 39, whereas with the intermediate alleles having between 27 and 35, we know that individuals themselves will likely not develop Huntington's disease because they're below that threshold of 36. But what the gray area kind of comes in terms of the clinical implications that intermediate allele will have for future generations. And we know that what can happen is, in fact, children or offspring of people who have an intermediate allele may in fact develop Huntington's disease later in life. They may not, but there is a possibility or a chance that may happen. And so that's kind of where that gray area comes in. So there's often a lot of confusion between these two different categories, but it's very important to distinguish between them because they have very different implications for the individual themselves.
So you're talking with the expansion that with someone with the lower count, the expansion would cause their children
Absolutely, absolutely.
Okay.
So we know with intermediate alleles, what can happen is that when that intermediate allele with 27 to 35 is passed on to the next generation, something called CAG repeat expansion can occur. And basically that's just a fancy term for an increase in the number of repeats. And so what would result in then that offspring or child developing Huntington's disease later in life is if that CAG repeat expansion occurred and it crossed that threshold of 36. So we know that these intermediate alleles can expand, and now scientists at this point in time don't really know or understand why this expansion occurs. But they do know some factors that can impact the likelihood of expansion. And so the two biggest factors, the first is the sex of the parent, so the gender of the person who is going to be passing on that intermediate allele. So we know that the risk is the highest for males. So when a male were to pass on an intermediate allele, the likelihood of it expanding and crossing that threshold of 36 into the Huntington's disease range is significantly greater than a female. And in fact, there's very little evidence to suggest that, and in fact, the evidence that is available says that when an intermediate allele is passed on by a female, it's most likely those numbers stay the same. Or maybe they'll decrease by one or two, but you don't really tend to see the intermediate alleles expanding into the HD range when passed on from a female. So, just to kind of recap, the chance of expansion is greatest for when it's passed on by a father. Now, the other factor that we know that's important and kind of modulates that risk is the CEG size itself. So we know that the larger the CEG size, the more likely there is going to be an expansion into the HD range. And this is really, it's kind of a little bit of a numbers game. Obviously, if you have a 35 CEG, you're only going to need one extra repeat to cross that threshold, whereas if you, had a 30 CEG, you're going to need six, and so on and so forth. So we know that males who have a larger intermediate allele size, say 34, 35, they have the greatest risk of passing on an expanded allele in the HD range, and therefore their children may develop Huntington's when they're adults.
Okay, now I have another question, if you don't mind me jumping in. Katie, I'm sorry, did you want to ask her something?
No, I just think I was just more of a statement than anything. It was just so interesting hearing this, because if someone's diagnosed with Huntington's, let's say they're in that gray area and they're not explained by their physician the correct, explanation of it, future generations, when Huntington's, if expansion causes it to arise again, they say, well, you have a family history, and they say, no, we don't, because generations have passed. It's interesting, like, to have that physicians to understand, to be able to speak with patients if they are in that gray area, exactly what that means for them.
Absolutely.
And their family.
Yeah. Absolutely. And we can talk in, a moment here about, the ways in which intermediate alleles are often identified, but that kind of speaks to this whole idea that when you have an intermediate allele in the mix, sometimes Huntington's can seem like it does skip a generation. All of a sudden you have an unaffected parent. You may have a family history, but you have a parent who has an intermediate allele. They don't develop some symptoms, and then, 20, 30 years later, their children do. And it seems like somehow Huntington's has skipped a generation. It's not, that's not the right terminology, because there is that intermediate allele there, but it can give the appearance of that, all of a sudden, Huntington's is resurfacing in a family after a few generations.
Interesting. Alicia, I want to thank you as well, because this research that you're doing, it's kind of like the foundation to all research, because once we know what the numbers mean and how they expand or not expand, how the intermediate alleles play a role in, future generations is going to be really, really important. But I'm also curious to know if there's any research being done about the non-affected HD partner's own alleles and how that plays in, or does it play into, the expansion process. For example, if my allele is 16 and my husband's was, say, 40, what role, if any, does my allele play, or vice versa, if my allele was, say, 40 and my husband's was 16, what role would that play? Because if it does expand in the male, would that mean that...
Yes, so we know that, and this is kind of an area that there's not a lot of research done in terms of the influence of, in the individual. We each have two copies of the Huntington gene. We get one copy from our mother. We get one copy from, our father. So basically, you only need one copy that has greater than 36 repeats in order to develop Huntington's disease. Now, most likely on that other copy, you have a quote-unquote normal number, 17 CEG repeats is kind of the average size in the general population. Now, there has been research that's been done that looks at the influence of that smaller allele, so say that 17, and whether or not it impacts how the disease presents in the individual themselves. So if somebody, say, on their smaller allele had 17 versus 20, does that make, does that result in earlier or later age of onset based on, the size of the higher allele? And, this is really an area, again, that still needs research, because some studies say, oh, yes, there is, there's no impact whatsoever. whereas there has been some studies that said, oh, well, maybe perhaps there is. So at this point in time, you know, kind of the jury's still out on the influence of the lower allele on disease presentation. Having said that, there is at this point in time no research on whether or not the lower allele will influence the likelihood of expansion in terms of the higher allele. So it's not that knowledge is just not known. I don't know if that answers your question
I would also want to know what influence, if any, would it have on onset. So, for example, would it present earlier if the unaffected parent's allele was maybe a little high, maybe it was 25 or 20, you know?
And, you know, this is really, again, this isn't kind of my area. I'm not completely 100% up to date on that research, but like I said, it's, you know, there has been studies, and earlier studies have shown that there is no influence, you know, based on that lower allele. I remember hearing that there was kind of a recent study that said there may be an influence. So it's really, I think that, you know, if I were to say, you know, one way or another right now, I would say that the data is kind of inconsistent, but right. The most data that has been done so far kind of has said that, no, you know, there is no influence. There's kind of like maybe two camps, you know, in that respect. There's,
yep,
you know, some
bet.
Research that says yes, and then there's some research that says no. And now isn't that just the nature of research in general, right? So that's,
so
you know, when research... I'm sorry.
We had someone in the chat room, and I want you to kind of revisit this, because they're wondering, is there going to be research in depth in that area regarding the unaffected? I guess the person wants to have that addressed again.
Yeah, you know, and again, I apologize, but it's really not kind of my area, so. I assume that, you know, this is, you know, another area that will be examined in the future, especially in terms of looking at, you know, therapeutics. We have to understand, you know, how the lower allele will influence the higher allele and so on and so forth. So, you know, I wish I could say definitively, but yeah, I would assume that there are.
Put you on the spot.
I assume that there are.
The community was wanting answers. No.
I know.
We're just happy that you're doing this research.
You know, this is the nature of research. With every question that you answer, you create 10 more questions, and so. It's not, and you know, and dealing with and researching influencing factors. So whether or not those are factors that are influencing age of onset within a family or influencing the likelihood of expansion, it's very difficult and very tricky to kind of piece out those individual influencers, because there may be 100 different influencers, but within every family, it may be different. And so it's, you know, when you start breaking it down into that type of research, it becomes very complex. And so, you know, the research groups out there who are, you know, looking at those questions, they have quite a task on their hands.
Yes, they do. Research is just a very difficult field, I think, to get cooperation, and I just appreciate the fact that you are tackling this, and
I think, you know,
I want to thank
on that
you for doing that.
On that respect, I think, you know, all the researchers really want to thank the Huntington's community, because, as I said at the beginning of the show, the Huntington's community really stands alone in terms of their willingness to engage with scientists and researchers, and, you know, become part of the process of, you know, finding these answers. And so it's really, I see it as a two-way street that, you know, without, you know, the patients and families who are willing to participate in the research, you know, the researchers have really nothing to go on. So it's really a give and a take. And so I think that as much as, you know, the Huntington's community, you know, thanks us researchers, you know, I probably can speak on behalf of all Huntington's researchers and say that we thank you because you helped make that research possible. And I know that from my own studies. I had tremendous, you know, participation from, you know, people with intermediate alleles from all over the world. And, you know, quite frankly, my research wouldn't have happened if it wasn't for them. And so, like I said, it really is a two-way street.
So what is next for you? What are you working on next?
Next, well, I just defended my PhD at the end of 2012. And so in January, I started a postdoc here at UBC. And I'm switching gears a little bit. It's bittersweet because I'm no longer focusing on Huntington's disease. But now I'm looking, it is really bittersweet because I've been studying Huntington's disease for, you know, almost 10 years now. So, you know, to switch gears, it's, while I welcome the challenge of learning new things, Huntington's has played such a important role in, you know, my research and my life to this date. I've made great friends and great colleagues. So, it's a little sad to be switching gears, but now I'm going to be looking at providing genetic counseling for individuals that have psychiatric illness. So
that's a wonderful
bipolar, those types of things. So,
well, now you do realize that Huntington's is a neuropsychiatric disorder.
Absolutely, yeah. So there is.
You may see
us.
Alicia, she's going to do everything to keep.
You're going to see us one way or the other, I'm sure.
Yes. Well, you know, I'm not going to leave completely. I still, like I said, I really do have a passion for Huntington. So while I may not be studying it now on a day-to-day basis, I'll definitely, you know, stay abreast of the latest.
Yeah. Well, we wish you all the luck, and we thank you for all your hard work. And we hope that you'll come back to us again at some stage in your career. And I hear you're about to have a new addition to your family, so we wish you luck with that too.
Well, thank you very much. Yes, now on to a new journey, a new role, the role of motherhood.
Most important one.
That's right. Well, thank you very much
wonderful.
For this opportunity. It's great, and you know, I really hope that you know, knowledge on intermediate alleles, you know, you're doing your part in getting it out there, and I know it kind of can be a little complex sometimes, so it's really the first step at bringing this, you know, really important information to the community.
Wonderful. Now, Katie or James, did you have any other questions?
No, other than thank you so much, Dr. Smith.
Thank you.
And did we have
that?
Thank you.
There was no boo button. We couldn't boo you leaving.
No, we can't use the clap button. That just wouldn't work. Did we have any questions in the chat room?
Not right now. We have someone saying that even though she switched gears, God bless her for coming on the show and sharing what she knows. So we really appreciate
it.
And you know, just to kind of put a plug there, you know, I'm working with the Huntington Society of Canada, working on a patient pamphlet or a fact sheet all about intermediate alleles, and so that's going to be available, you know, within Canada in the fall. And there's, you know, we're making arrangements with, you know, the Huntington Society of America to bring that fact sheet there. So hopefully there'll be, you know, some further resources coming to the Huntington's community that, you know, can provide some reliable information on, you know, this really unique category of HD genes.
Yes, and we'd love to get that information on Help for HD International as well.
Yeah, that's great. Once it's available, I'd be happy to forward it on. And yes, that would be excellent.
Thank you so much. And I guess tonight we'll conclude the show. And again, Dr. Lisa Samaka, thank you so much for your work. And good luck to you in all you do. Have a healthy and happy baby and a wonderful life. And we will watch your career grow.
Yes, I look forward to talking to you again in the future. Thank you again.
Okay, find us on Facebook, HD International. Katie, thanks for coming on. James, I'm happy to have you back. Thank you.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Come back and listen to the on-demand episodes. You can also find this on iTunes. Get the free app on the road, Health for HD, at healthforhd-international.org. And also available on that app is the original mobile connection to education, resources, and information about JHD and HD. Everyone have a great night, and we'll talk to you next week.
Good night, everyone.